Welcome to the Wang Bennett's Podcast, celebrating West Virginia people, places, and the culture of Southern Appalachia. Now, here's your host, Wang Bennett.
Welcome to Wang Bennett's Podcast. My name is Wayne Bennett, and this is episode 119. It's November the 15th, 2023. About a month ago, my wife and I were in Charleston at the West Virginia Book Festival. We'd gone down there to see an author that had written a story on the Holocaust and sat in a seminar. And then we were walking around checking some of the exhibits of the authors, and my wife grabbed my arm and said, there's a guy talking to you. Well, I don't hear it too well in crowds. And so when I turned, I didn't really recognize him. And we got to talking, and it's our guest today, Mr. J.D. Wilson. Welcome.
Thank you. Good to be here.
You're a Beckley guy, and which was, how did you know me?
Well, I have listened to some of your podcasts and seen the Facebook posts about the podcast, but I guess I really knew you from remembered you from high school. You were a teacher there at Woodrow Wilson. I did not have you for any classes, but I remember you being there. I think you were the wrestling coach.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, you graduated from Woodrow Wilson in 1976, and tell me a little bit about your early life, with your parents and where you grew up at.
Grew up in Crab Orchard. Started there when I was younger. We moved around a lot, so lived in quite a few states. The last, before we moved back, we were in Arizona for a few years. I counted it up at one time. I think up until the sixth grade, I think I went to about 8 or 10 different schools.
Wow.
And we moved back here. And then from the sixth grade on, lived at Crab Orchard there. Went to grade school there 1 year and Park Junior High, graduated from Woodrow. Just, great growing up in the late 60s and early 70s here in Beckley.
Now, as moving around so much, did you have a normal childhood?
I did. It was normal for me. I don't have, I know a lot of folks, you get out of high school and you have friends you since kindergarten or before that you went to school with. I didn't have that because, we were moving every few years.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't see anything. That was my normal.
How did you stay busy as a kid? Did you play sports or?
I never tried out for school sports, but around the neighborhood, we were always into bikes at the time, grade school, middle school, had friends around the neighborhood, and seemed like we were constantly on bicycles. And, at that time we could, it was nothing at all for us to take off and ride bikes down to Crab Orchard and be gone all day. And Mom and Dad didn't think anything, at that time.
Well, was you home by dark?
Yeah. I mean, now, my kids growing up, my grandkids now, no way I would allow that. But at that time, that was okay.
Yeah, the society's changed a lot. We got, every kid's got a cell phone now. And they're keep track of them and... back in those days, like I said, if as long as you're home by dark, your parents didn't worry about you too much. They had their own things. But you mentioned going to Woodrow Wilson, and I taught 11th grade English over there. Who did you have in 11th grade?
I had, and I think as we were emailing there, I was telling you about that. I still remember, to be honest, I'm not sure if it was the 10th grade or the 11th grade, but she has always stuck with me. I had Mrs. Larkin. Some of the short stories, I think I mentioned to you, we read Shirley Jackson's story, The Lottery.
Uh-huh.
And I guess because of that plot twist at the end, how shocking that was to me. And I've always remembered that. That was really one of those early things I remember that pressed me into reading. And even eventually, several decades later, thinking about, hey, I would like to try writing. And I had her and I've always remembered her.
Well, now, you mentioned the story of the lottery, and I haven't read that story in years. I can kind of remember people would get together a certain time of the year from the community, and it was kind of like a festival.
Right, yeah.
And then they would draw names, and if you didn't get your name drawn, they would kill you.
that was it. I mean, it was really a plot twist there, you know, for like I said, I don't know if it's 10th or 11th grade, but I'd never read anything like that.
Well, I taught also, I had a reading seminar class in the 12th grade, and we only had about 12, 13 students, but they all were voracious readers. I mean, I wasn't a very good teacher, but I did read a lot that year, you know, trying to keep up with the students in class, what they were doing. And of course, back then you had the trilogy and Future Shock and Brave New World, all that stuff, and kind of kept me interested over the years. Now, I don't know whether you were around or whether you remember this, but Raleigh County hired a poet in residence for the high schools. His name was Larry Levy, and he worked at Woodrow. He would come into my 11th grade English class once a week, and then he would go somewhere else the next day, you know, in Woodrow. And they just did it for 1 year, I think. And he would teach poetry and some writing experiences. I probably learned more than the kids did. I mean, you know, he was a young guy, but he brought a couple people in, a couple authors, and talked, and it was really a good experience with us. But he would have probably been around that time, but I'm not sure exactly whether he just taught in 11th grade or whether it was all the classes together or not.
I don't recall him. I know during the 11th and 12th grade years, I was taking drafting at the VOTEC, and I happened to get hired by our drafting teacher. Had an architectural business. So I ended up leaving school early and would go to work while he was teaching and be there by myself working, but I got school credit for that.
Uh-huh.
And so that, I think my senior year, I left school at 9:15 in the morning.
Really?
I had two classes, left about 9:15, went to work, and I got my school credit for, you know, on the job for working. And so 11th and 12th grade, I had short days.
Who did you work for?
Robert Wade.
Robert Wade. Well, there was, even when I was in the 12th grade, you know, I got out, I think, about 11:30 and got to go to work at that time. Now, what did you do? Did you continue this after you graduated from high school?
Yeah, I worked for Mr. Wade there for a few years, and he went out of business. I left from working for him. I worked for a land surveyor in town. That was right after I graduated. Didn't go to college. Went to work for this for the surveyor. And after working for him for about a year, I thought, you know, if I'm going to do this, it'd probably be better if I went back to school and did something. So I went a year out of high school. I decided to go to West Virginia Tech in Montgomery. And so I went down there and got a two-year degree in engineering technology. And got out, graduated from there, went to work for Westmoreland Coal Company. And went to work there at Westmoreland. And I thought, you know, this is okay for a few years, but I'm going to get out of here. I'm going to California or somewhere. And I've been here ever since.
Now, did you get married anytime around that time?
I did. I got married after I had got out of college. I got married about 3 years later. And, yeah, then raised a couple kids. And, yeah, it didn't take long. I think I matured a little bit there, you know, a few years after having the kids and things. And, you know, started thinking more along the lines of, you know what, this place here, Beckley in southern West Virginia, it's there's not any better place to raise kids and to, you know, for them to grow up and things. You know, I have never wanted to leave.
Other than work, did you have any other creative juices? I mean, were you drawing or writing or what were you, anything?
I have always took some classes there at Tech in just electives in art appreciation and painting, and have always had an interest in that. got into doing some painting and drawing, and that turned into doing some artwork for a couple different magazines that I worked for, music magazines, did that for a few years just on the side. And I've wondered at times how I got into like an engineering type profession when really I've always been interested in more in art and writing and even music. I'm not musical, can't play an instrument, but love music. I've always been interested.
What kind of music do you listen to in high school?
Then mostly what we would call hard rock. You know, that and friends there in high school, that's what we liked. And since then, yeah, I've kind of grown into more, just anything. Bluegrass. You know, I like some of the old classic country from the 50s and 60s. Jazz. I have on my SiriusXM in the truck a couple of the bookmark stations are the Frank Sinatra channel and the big bands from the 40s.
Yeah.
So, I mean, just anything.
I know in the 90s, you said you got with magazine Relics.
Yes.
And then with Grateful Dead's magazine, the Unbroken Chain, is that what it was?
Yeah, that was Relics was a larger publication. It was published in New York City. It's kind of nationwide. And I did some artwork for them. The Unbroken Chain was a smaller magazine. It was out of Richmond, Virginia. And but I was listed as a staff artist in both of those, and just at random times, you know, would submit things, and sometimes they would publish them, sometimes not. Just depends.
Is that how you get hooked up with them? I mean, you just send them something?
Yeah, that's what I did at that time. I was really into pen and ink drawing and was sending some things out to different places. And these two magazines liked, you know, some of it. And that's how I got started with it.
Huh. Do you ever worry about them just taking it and using it and not?
Yeah, you know, there's always, I guess that can happen. I mean, but I guess it's like with the writing or anything. You just have to kind of put it out there and hope it goes somewhere. You know, yeah. People can take it and use it in whatever way they wish without your consent, but that can happen, I guess.
Well, how did, like the Grateful Dead, that's, how did you get mixed up with them exactly?
I had a few of their record albums in high school, got into college, got more, had some friends, you know, we listened to them a lot. And after I graduated from college, went to a couple of their shows with my wife and I, went to see them a few times, and just kind of got hooked on that music. It was really, they were really improvisational, you know, never played the same thing twice. It just, you know, you couldn't tell what they were going to do. And got into their music, and that's how I sent out a few pen and ink drawings there to a couple of those magazines, got started. And even Unbroken Chain, I could ask the lady there in Richmond that published that magazine. I had another friend that was a photographer, and I'd even got through the magazine, got her backstage passes a few times to go back and take pictures.
Wow.
Of the band.
So you got to meet Jerry Garcia?
No, I never did. I could get the backstage passes for her as a photographer. I never did.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't. Well, you know, I never listened to the Grateful Dead that much, but my oldest son kind of got connected with them, you know, listening to them, and I guess he would be classified as a deadhead. He's been to several, I don't know how many concerts you got to go to or whatever to be called that. But then I started listening to them some. And you know, before I'd ever heard them at all, I was thinking it was some kind of a hard rock group, you know. And then when I listened to them, I thought, well, they've got vocal harmonies and rhythm, and they do have some guitar overtures there, but they were easy to listen to. And I particularly liked the one of their most famous songs, Sugar Magnolia, I think.
Oh, yeah.
And then Truckin', of course, you know, those. I still don't have any of their albums, but I do check on them every once in a while. And I can remember I was actually at my son's house for a few days when the Jerry Garcia trial was going on. It's after he died, and they were fighting over his money or
something.
And do you remember that?
Yeah, I think that was his his wife at the time, and yeah, I don't know who, I remember that. I don't remember the particulars of it.
Now, you have mentioned in your writing that you actually listen to music when you write.
Yes.
Now, I write a little bit, but I just couldn't do that for some reason. I'm one of these guys that's got, everybody's got to be quiet, get out of here, you know. But a lot of writers do that. Yeah. A lot of, as far as the listening to music and any particular kind of music you listen to.
Sometimes just something to fill up space, just have something in the background. A lot of times some of the horror type things I've written, I know a couple of those short story books that I've written. A lot of times on the computer, I'll listen to, I guess they call it ambient music. And it's kind of a, kind of just instrumental type stuff that maybe is kind of dark, you know, and but just something kind of sets the mood, you know. And I just, seems like for me anyway, I like to have something other than just the silence, just something in the background.
Now you have, you mentioned your wife. Does she do anything affiliated with drawing or writing or anything like that?
No.
Other than supporting you?
No, not really. She just supports my bad habits, I guess.
What about your children? Any of them?
No. None of them really. I have two kids, both a boy and a girl, and they're both, you know, grown and... my daughter's married, has two small grandchildren with her, and then my son, I've got a 19-year-old grandson with him. And so two kids, three grandkids, but none of them really do anything like that.
Let's talk about the writing process. You, when and where do you write most of the time when you do write?
I have an office there in the house where I work, and, you know, I'll just sit there at the desk there and... Yeah, you know, working a full-time job, it's hard to take time. You know, I've read a couple times. Stephen King had a book. It's called On Writing, and that early on inspired me to, hey, you know, I want to do that. But he talks about how you should have a certain time every day to sit down and do that. Well, for me, with work and with life, it's hard to do that sometimes.
Yeah.
And so I'll, you know, have times where I can, especially late in the evenings, you know, after I work, sometimes I'm up late at night, and maybe I'll work a few hours, 2, 3, 4 hours at night, maybe on something like that, and maybe do it for, you know, weeks at a time. And then I'll just hit a patch there where I just don't feel like it, and I might go weeks or a few months and not do anything.
When did you actually start writing your first novel?
That first,
how old were you?
Well, I was, that was just in, started, it was published in 2019, that first book, The Foxfire Terror. It took me about 2 to 3 years to write that. And that was just, you know, like I said, you know, sometimes spending a lot of time with it, sometimes taking a break for quite a while. But it took me a while. Once, you know, when I got into it and I had this idea I wanted to do that, when you actually start writing and you actually start getting back into things like the English and the grammar and mechanics of writing, things that I haven't even looked at since, you know, high school or college, there's a lot more involved in it than what I initially thought. And so, you know, it took a while for that first book. The others after that seemed to come easier. You know, that first book, writing it, going through the process of self-publishing, and, you know, it was a learning process.
Now, your first book that you wrote, what inspired that? I mean, you know, to start writing, you kind of got to have a story, you know, you want to tell. What inspired that story?
I just had this idea for this thriller that takes place on the Appalachian Trail. And, you know, I didn't want just the typical murder mystery that, you know, you wanted something with some type of twists and turns to it. And that's another thing, you know, as far as anything I've written, any of these four books, it's some writers I've read, they have a plot outline. They sit down and they know, you know, where the story starts, kind of where it's going, how it ends. And, you know, you just fill in the details as you go. I just never been able to do that. I start out with this idea, and it just goes wherever it goes.
There's a book out there, and I can't remember who wrote the book, but there's a book called The Plot. If you ever get a chance, read that. It's about a writers, and it's kind of, it's catchy, you know, but if you get a chance, read that, you would enjoy that.
Yeah.
Now your first book is a horror story, and it's called The Foxfire Terror. But you don't seem like an eerie, morbid kind of guy. So have you ever walked on the Appalachian Trail?
I have, we've crossed just where the trail crosses the highway a few times, been around it, a few times and vacationing and things. And here last year, my wife and I like motorcycle riding. And so I have a bike that we take, quite a few just day trips in the, summers. Last year we rode down to Pembroke, Virginia. And there is the hotel down there where the movie Dirty Dancing was filmed, the Mountain Lake. And so we've been down there quite a few times. We'll go down there sometimes, just have lunch at the hotel. We rode the bike down there, and there's a road that leaves the hotel. It actually turns into a gravel road. And we left the hotel and took this gravel road that probably 20 miles or so from the hotel hooks back up down near Parrisburg. But up on top of the mountain there, the Appalachian Trail crosses this gravel highway. And so we stopped there where the trail crossed. There were actually half a dozen people there. There's a parking spot there where the trail crosses. We stopped there and just got off the bike. We actually walked out the trail maybe 100 yards. That's the extent of my Appalachian Trail hiking.
So you've had to do a lot of research to some of the starting points and
right,
all that stuff.
Yeah, and I did that. The trail takes place, or the story here takes place in northern Georgia. And so I did some research on the different locations there. And
well, one of the things that a lot of times I'll ask people about their bucket list and those kind of things, one of the things that was on my bucket list, I never wanted to walk the Appalachian Trail, the total 2,000 some miles,
right. But
I did want to maybe spend 3 or 4 days hiking a certain segment of
right.
it, the part that goes into West Virginia and stuff. And but after reading your book, I don't think I want to do that stuff now. I'll just read about it, I think. But now what about, you write something, but then you read it later, you don't like it, you want to rewrite it. Do you have to do that a lot, or do you hit it right the first time?
Oh, no, I'll hit it. I'll generally try to get through the whole story one time, and even at that, going back and changing little things here and there, but try to get through it and get it written, and then I'll go back through the whole thing at least 3, 4, 5 times, and just keep tweaking the story here and there, details, and even at that, once I'm done with it and I say, okay, this is it, and I'll put it out there, and I still, of the 4 books I've written, I have yet to go back and read one. I just have no desire to.
Really?
I start looking at it, and I have at times open one up and kind of leafing through it and start reading things, and I'm always like, why in the world did I do, why is this here? What, that's wrong. And I don't like to go back and look at them.
Now I've read 3 of your books. And one of the things I noticed in your books, I guess this is a tool of the trade. And of course it would appeal to somebody like me, but not necessarily everybody. But you use a term like familiarity. I mean, you use like, TV shows like The Rifleman and The Big Valley and something that I would identify. A younger person may not. Of course, I don't know. There's reruns on TV now. But you mentioned songs like Detroit City, Bobby Bear, and Seasoned in the Sun, places like Huntington. And you mentioned Colburn, West Virginia. Is there a real Colburn?
Yeah, I looked that up at that time, and I'm not sure. I don't recall.
I didn't know whether you'd made that one up.
You know, I think maybe there is. You know, there's Coalwood, where the Rocket Boys were from. If I remember right, I think there is a Coalburg that is between Montgomery and Charleston, okay. Which is not where, you know, the setting is for my story, but I think there is a town called that.
But the but the familiarity kind of, you know, keeps somebody like me interested, or someone in my age group. Let's talk about some of your books. The first book I read is called The Foxfire Horror, and you know, I read the Foxfire series back 40 years ago, and I never even thought about what Foxfire was.
Right.
What is Foxfire?
That is, and like I said, I did some research, you know, and had to study on that and find out what it was. But it is actually a mushroom that glows in the dark.
And it kind of blue. It turns blue, I think.
Right.
But it's a story about two guys who had been comrade students together, and after the one particularly graduates before he gets into the workforce, he decides he wants to walk the Appalachian Trail. So he gets in contact with an old buddy, and they decide to do it. And you pull in several characters. You pull in the sheriff and a guy who's avoiding people. It's kind of lives in the woods, and another a professional family. But you do a good job. You pull it all in. You have murder, you got mystery. You don't have any sex in that one.
No, I don't. And I've stayed away from that. And as well, any profanity, pretty much. I don't, write that in my books. You know, and some people would look at that today and say, well, that's why I don't like it. You know, that's a selling point for a lot of people.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And I just have this idea that, you can tell a good story without that.
I think you did a good job with it. And but I would highly recommend it. I enjoyed it. Again, I don't think I'll go on the Appalachian Trail now, but the Foxfire Horror. Then one that I particularly enjoyed, and I think mainly because this guy was in my age group, it's called Remember a Day. Where did the title come from, The Day?
Well, that, I guess, just based on, this older fella has this, some things happen in his life there, and he comes to this, it's like the light bulb comes on. Nearing the end of his life, he wants to recall, I guess what we would call the good time. And so that, pretty much the entire story is just this effort that he has to recapture some of that. That's interesting, Wayne, that one. The story early on, I think I write in there about this couple. They get married in, I specified that it was in Pembroke, Virginia.
It was.
But the place where they got, where this couple in the story gets married, that was actually the church where my wife and I got married.
Oh, really?
And I even, there was an old preacher there, this fella at this, I think it's a Methodist church. It's right there as you drive through Pembroke. It's on the right as you're headed south. And I told my wife, I said, I'm going to use him in the story. And so I contacted the church there. Got hold of one of the ladies that I think is secretary or something there. And she told me, this Reverend Kelly, Raymond Kelly, was his name. He had been there for quite a few years. And if I remember correctly, she told me he had just retired several years before, but that he had passed away just within the last year or two. And I was telling the lady there, I was wanting to use him in my story. And she didn't say, that's fine or no. And I got thinking about that, and I thought, probably shouldn't use his real name. I used the name, but I changed a few letters in the name.
I see.
It was that account is, I guess, I don't know, writers for me, I know I draw on a lot of personal things, when I'm putting stuff on paper like that.
Now, it was called Remember a Day, and the main character is Jack Grant, and he's a guy in his 70s, early 70s, I mean, and like you said, he's wanting to go relive a very special time of his life. His wife has passed away, but during his trip, he touches a lot of lives. He didn't actually plan to do that, but he does touch a lot of lives. Even though the theme is a little melancholic, it's true. It's true to life. And if you remember that movie Bucket List with Morgan Freeman and Jack Nicholson, they wanted to climb Mount Everest or something, you know, and do this one thing. But they hadn't never done it. You know, they wanted to do something they had never done. Jack Grant wanted to do something like that he had experienced. And so it was, he was going to go all the way across the country from Virginia to California and find a Paradise Inn, Feldman's Paradise Inn. And along the way, he influenced several people. To me, that's a Hallmark movie. I mean, that really, Remember a Day would make a good Hallmark movie. You ought to think of sending it off to them. I think they might take that one. Now, you had a third book that I read was called Deviation. And this was a series of short stories. Tell me a little, how long did it take to write Remember a Day?
Those, you know, after that first book, after I got that one published, it was an encouragement for me to, I had some people that had read it, was really encouraged by, after the first book, I thought, well, I'm going to try to do this more seriously than what I have. And so the next three books probably spent more time without as many breaks, and around each one, around a year and a half, something like that, to do each of those.
Now, the deviation, the short stories, it reminded me so much of some of the Twilight Zone stories I used to watch on television, or Alfred Hitchcock, some of the things that you brought out. Loved Alfred Hitchcock when I was growing up, but especially there was one story that you had that was where the guy gets off the interstate and he goes to one place, and then he goes back and he can't get back on the interstate, and the road keeps getting shorter and shorter, and it gets to a point that but there's another story that you wrote about these people that bought a house, and the guy was going to retire as a surgeon or had plenty of money, but they started getting visitors in the house, that ghost-like visitors, and it kind of goes back to the lottery type theme, because somebody's got to pay, somebody's going to go, and people, you got to read this. What did you want the readers to take away in some of those stories that you wrote, though?
You know, those, I enjoy writing the short stories because they're less complicated. You know, there's not as much chance. You know, in a novel, you write something in the first three chapters, and later toward the end of the book, you have a contradiction that you don't realize. You know, short stories, not so much, that. And so I enjoy writing those. And it's interesting about the lottery with the one story about the people buy the house. I hadn't thought of that, but that's true. That could, and I think, like I said, that's subconsciously the things you've read over your lifetime and you've stored back in that gray matter there, you don't realize how that can influence you. And
well, let me point out something else. Also in the Foxfire Horror, one of the characters keep saying that the people have to pay, the ones that some of his victims. And so you've got, maybe inadvertently, right. It's kind of interesting though
that's true. That's true. I hadn't never made that connection, but that could well be that I just knew without even thinking about it.
Now, I've never read the book, Hallucina. What is that about?
That one, again, is just short stories, a lot like the Deviation book, you know, short stories. That the Hallucina, it actually, though, has a few stories in it that are not horror stories. One about some young boys, this one about these young boys who are looking for a secret fishing hole that actually takes place in West Virginia. It has a couple stories in there, I guess classified as flash fiction, which is generally stories that are, you know, 300 to 500 words or less. So a couple of short stories there. One of those about a young boy going hunting with his dad, that one is actually autobiographical. You know, it's kind of a story I wrote that I reflect back on. You know, my father passed away in 2003, and that story, you know, is just almost what I remember as a kid, and we would go squirrel hunting. But there's some different ones in that, not so much all horror stories. And in both of the Hallucina and Deviation, those have some stories in there. Some that were, I'd received a couple honorable mentions from, there's a contest. It's really an international contest. It's the L. Ron Hubbard Writers of the Future contest. It's a quarterly thing, four times a year. They take submissions from all over the world. And generally, you know, I haven't placed in the top rankings there. I've received a couple honorable mentions, which they have several hundred honorable mentions each quarter. But they will have each quarter, the submissions to that contest are around 7,000 to 9,000 entries.
Wow. Yeah, I was going to, I'm glad you mentioned the awards and recognition. Now, does somebody edit your books or do you edit yourself or how do you do that?
I don't have an editor, you know, and that's one thing. You read these writing forums and all, and people, you can't do that without having an editor, you know, is whatever. And but the thing is, without being a full-time writer and actually making some money with that, you know, that's expensive. So I don't have an editor, but I do have, there are some online sources I use a lot. I use Grammarly, and there's a really good program. It's called the Hemingway Editor that goes through and checks, you know, pretty much, you know, basic things in there. And, you know, I use those a lot. And, you know, it would be nice one day to be able to hire an editor to go through your books. And so as of now, I consider myself a novice. And to be honest, I was driving up thinking about you, talking with you this morning, and how it's kind of intimidating having an English teacher read my books.
Well, I wasn't that good an English teacher, but the one thing you got to watch too in the writing business, it's the same thing as in the music business. There's people out there that'll take your money. You know, and, you know, they'll tell you, well, you need this, you need this, you need that. And by the time you've invested, you've got a lot of money invested and it may not ever get it back. And the same way with music. I mean, they'll tell you, come to Nashville. Well, you can go down there and you can spend a lot of money getting some recordings, but it doesn't mean you're going to be in a top hit or anything like that. So it's, you got to kind of, you know, there, and some of them may help, you may not. You once wrote that good writing can transport you to other places. And I guess that's one of the reasons why I like to read. I'm not a well-traveled person, but I do enjoy reading. And what's the next book you got coming out? I mean, what's coming?
I have one that I've started, and I have, talking to my wife, you know, been thinking about, you know, maybe I just need to concentrate more on submitting short stories to various contests and publications and things. And so I've kind of straddled the fence between, you know, I have done some of that, but at the same time, I've started another book, which will be a horror genre, I guess you'd call it, but and it's called, you know, working title. I'd say it wouldn't change, but it's called The Black Acid Carnival. And so I got several thousand words into that, but it's, you know, something that, yeah, it's probably still a year away or something if I finish it.
Have you had the same publisher for all your books?
Well, I just used KDP, is Kindle Direct Publishing. where you go through their process, you can publish, you know, you go through the online process, you publish there, then your books are for sale on Amazon. So all four of these published through them. There's another company called Ingram Spark, who I may check into that with this next book. You can actually go through the process with them, publish through them, and you can have your books for sale on Amazon and in Barnes & Noble. And so I'm thinking about checking with them. Yeah, mine are for sale only on Amazon. And then I personally have, you know, I have a number of copies of each one that I've done some book fairs and festivals where I'll sell them.
Okay. How do you, you got book fairs. We go to, Lewisburg has one in the 1st of August. We go to a festival there and always go to West Virginia Book Festival. And if you think people don't read, you ought to go to one of them festivals. I mean, they're carrying boxes right. and boxes of books out. So there's plenty, still people out there that read and still a lot of books that sell. Yeah. But if a person was interested in getting your book, is there some way other than Amazon? Or I know you have a website. And is there any local... anybody selling books of your books yet?
Not locally, and I really haven't checked around with anyone doing that. I got a message on Facebook there a few weeks ago from a lady that had asked the Sophia Library about it. They don't have copies of them. And she asked me, why don't I do that? And so I haven't done it yet, but I'm going to check with the Beckley and some local libraries to see if they want some copies, donate some copies there. I don't have any for sale locally in any stores here, but I haven't really pursued that. You can just search J.D. Wilson on Amazon and find them. Or if you go to my website, jdwilsonbooks.com, you can go to my website there, and it has links to all four of them on Amazon.
Yeah. Well, the writer Billy Wilder has on his tombstone, he said, "I'm a writer. Well, nobody's perfect." And what do you want to accomplish? I mean, I've heard you make reference to time that you kind of think writing, guys who make a lot of money at are successful writers, but that's not necessarily true all the time. I mean, a lot of people become more famous after they're dead, you know, and they don't, there's a lot of writers out there that never made hardly anything while they were alive, but they're actually would be considered, history would consider them a very successful writer. But where do you want to be down the road, next few years? What do you want to do? You're still working. How much longer are you going to work?
Yeah, I'm still working. I'd like to, I work for an engineering consultant, and we do mining and stormwater permitting and such as that. And as long as that holds up, we have work to do. I'd like to still do that for a few more years before I retire. And I'll still continue to write. And, maybe once I'm retired, I could put more effort into that. But just wanting to, I've said before, if you look at writing and you figure, hey, I want to do that for the money. Yeah, you're looking at it the wrong way, because I've sold some books, and but by no means, enough to make a living at. I guess primarily I just want to, it's a hobby that I enjoy. And like you said, even after I'm gone, whether they go anywhere or not, it's something that maybe one of these days my grandkids will crack open a copy of one of them and say, hey, my grandpa wrote that. just something that I enjoy doing. So
that's great. That's great. Well, I think that you're wildly imaginative. I think you've got your books are character driven. And you're quite the wordsmith. I've enjoyed them, and keep on writing, and we'll keep getting you back here. I'd love to talk to you some more. But you're welcome to come back anytime you want.
Hey, I appreciate that. I really thank you for having me on here today.
And anybody else that would like to be on our program, you can contact me at awbennett50@gmail.com, and we'll get you on here. And until next time, remember, if you're not dead yet, you're not done yet. And until then, God bless you. Chugging, got my chips cashed in, keep chugging like the dude I made.
together. Oh, that's in line. Just keep chugging. Flashing marquees on Main Street, Chicago, New York, Detroit, and it's all on the same street. A typical city involved in a typical daydream. Hang it up and see what tomorrow brings. Dallas got a salt machine. Houston too close to New Orleans. New York got the ways and means and just won't let you be.